is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Sharon Sarles. This is the Great Shalom, and I promised you some practical tips. We are in the midst of a very interesting time, aren't we? We're all shut in our houses. I know in my metro area, it is seriously being enforced, and you may not live in a metro area, or you may live in a state where things are different, but we are certainly in interesting times. So I am going to provide some practical suggestions. I'm thinking maybe you need some suggestions about what to do with your children because you are in your homes, you're cooped up, or at least away from school. And that's a beneficial thing. But, you know, I've had such good news yesterday that I just have a completely different perspective. Now, I was not in panic ever. You know, I really think that there was a lack of proportionality. People just don't really seem to understand. So, stop, breathe, listen, and process in what you hear. Process what you hear. Some people are telling you fool things. Some people are telling you right things. But even among the right things, they seem to be misunderstood a lot. So, and sometimes two things can be true at the same time. So stop, breathe, and think, right? So yes, it's prudent to stay in so we can slow down the possible pandemic. But because we don't know how many people are infected, we don't know how low the death rate is. Think about that. When we test people who are obviously sick, and we know that some people are sick and not obviously so, and we don't know how many people are sick, but if we test the people who we know are sick and only 6% of them die, and those are only the people over 60, that's not an apocalyptic everybody dropping. That's not close to what it was like in 1918. And of those people who do get sick, we have so much more going for us than we did in 1918, so much greater understanding of viruses and so much more medical technology. So yes, it's right to stay in, but gosh, it is not right to panic. And it's not, so among the more stupid things that I have heard said, one was saying, well, containment is ridiculous. So it's just xenophobic to close the border to China. Remember people saying that? when President Trump said, we're not accepting any flights from China. They said, oh, that's racist and xenophobic. And what we need to do is simply wait for a vaccine. Well, to say that the first part was silly, and the second part was also silly because you just don't understand how vaccines work. In the first place, we have a very difficult time making vaccines. Yes, I am going to get to practical things for moms. We have a very difficult time making vaccines for viruses, and they take a long time to develop, and they take an even longer time to get to the whole world. So prevention is better, and cure would be good, and yet I thought that person was stupid. I discovered that was the position of the European Union at the time. Okay, and so last week, Gordon Brown, who was a far-left wing once Prime Minister of the UK, said he suggests a temporary one-world government. Okay, so the folks who handle this the worst want to be in charge? No. No, 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 no. No. Okay. So, and people, legal experts have weighed in, and yes, it is not legal. There is no law that supports a government shutting down, quarantining anybody. they can isolate somebody who's sick, but shutting down everybody and closing down churches. However, it's prudent for us to stay indoors. The test case about churches is going to be fought out in the courts. I pray for the man who has offered himself as the lamb in that case. He's doing us all a service. But nevertheless, so stay in, follow the authorities, and that's always the rule. It's always the rule in Christianity that we follow the authorities, unless there is a particular reason that we would violate God's rules, okay, of God's assignments. Okay, so for your children, it is really important that you protect them. One of the problems, I'm told, one of the reasons that things spread and got so bad in Madrid is, you understand, Madrid is a very dense city, much more like Manhattan. People live in small apartments that are many stories. And so most children don't have yards to play in like we do in Texas. So they go out to the common parks and playgrounds. And of course, children touch all the playground equipment, and then many, many children touch them. And so this is very important that you not permit them to do that. Now, there is a certain amount of sterilization that happens in the sun, in the hot sun, and apparently this virus does not like heat. So I'm hopeful about that. I see that my city, even though it's in Texas, has closed off all playgrounds, and that's good. But in other times, you want to reduce infection always. So what the better preschools do, and always have, is they have the children wash their hands when they come into the class, when they come in from the playground, before they eat, and of course, after they have done anything that's gotten their hands messy. So if you're doing painting or gluing, then you're going to wash your hands afterwards. And of course, after you go to the bathroom. And in preschool, we teach to wash your hands as long as you sing the alphabet song. So CDC is saying 20 seconds. Well, adults have a hard time counting 20 seconds. Also, but if you sing the ABC song, and so you scrub your hands this way, and then you wash the top of your hands, and you be very careful to wash under your fingernails, and there is research that shows that children who wash under their fingernails do have fewer days missed in school and have higher IQ. Well, IQ is usually based on vocabulary, so this actually does fall in line reasonably. So you don't need a sterile environment, but you do need an environment that is clean enough that the children's life force, shall we say, is not spent in just trying to fight off disease. And I'm going to suggest a notion here that maybe this is one of the reasons why very poor children have had such a hard time in school, is because they live in dirty environments. So it's important that you keep your house reasonably clean. I'm not saying sterile, but reasonably clean. And everyone should wash their hands when they come in from work and from play, from the garden. We should just make this a habit. And this should have always been a habit. There was a whole campaign about hand washing about the turn of the century. And the rich women were, you know, on a campaign at the same time as the settlement houses and child labor laws and washing hands. And it wasn't understood then because the germ theory wasn't understood well. But now that we have understood it, that was really part of our culture, and it's kind of dropped out. And it's important also when you're shaking hands because, you know, bathroom procedures, et cetera, you don't know what other people have done. So, washing our hands. And this may be something we want to improve when we are out, you know, when we're out. For instance, if we're at a meeting, we shake a lot of hands and then we go right into dinner. And so having wet wipes in your purse, in your pocket, is a fine idea. And people who do a lot of traveling in low-income countries, we don't say the third world anymore, okay, but low-income countries where there is a problem with hygiene and sanitation and there's not running water, people have who travel there, like being a missionary or something, an American who lives in a low-income country, we've gotten used to putting wipes in our purse. And of course, we've discovered now that it's good to have some stock on hand. So you should always have at least, my mother said, at least a week of groceries. I would say more than that. And so, you know, the Mormons keep, I think, a year of groceries in desiccated form, okay, under their bed. So a couple who has a double bed has bought frozen foods, dry foods from Deseret and stored it under their bed. And they've always done that for decades. And there's no reason why everybody should not have some disaster supplies, plenty of water in case the water got shut off. That's not what we were worried about here, but you should have some water. In Texas in the summer, you should calculate at least a gallon a person a day. And there are many ways to do that, but one of the most frugal ways is to buy your apple juice in a gallon glass jar and then reuse the gallon glass jar. Okay, so water, food, and I recommend getting from a prepper house some real disaster in dried form in a plastic container. But then also have something in your cupboard, because you don't really want to eat that. I'm not eating my that now. I'm eating from my freezer and from my pantry. But I'm, of course, living in a metro area where land is a lot less expensive than in Manhattan. See, Manhattan, one of the reasons that Manhattan had such a problem, well, there's a number of reasons, but one of them is they live in very small units and they like to go out, they depend on going out to very small restaurants. So a restaurant there has an average square foot a lot smaller, you know, a fraction of what the square footage would be in an average city in Texas. And so everybody's going out at least once a day to a restaurant and rubbing shoulders while they're eating. And so also early on, the authorities were encouraging them to continue spending in the economy. And also then we had lots of people returning from spring break when they were on the beaches in Florida and then they went home and to places like New York, and then they lived in these crowded conditions. And of course then they had a huge spike in the numbers because they were all of a sudden began doing outstanding testing. So a number of reasons. Incidentally, I'm just going to throw in here because I can't resist. Somebody, some fool, suggested in the New York Times, and the New York Times published it, that some fool suggested that conservative Christians are to blame for the coronavirus because we voted for Trump. Excuse me, what? And I suppose the Jews were responsible for the Black Plague because they knew how to wash their hands. If any other group were filled in that blank, there would be a hue and a cry and an outrage, and the New York Times would never have published it. And so I think this is something that really needs to be looked at. I think there needs to be some legal, political, and market action on this. All right, if the New York Times is going to be that sort of a publication, they don't deserve to be purchased. Okay, so moving right along, some other fools said, well, it will be all the red states that will die in this pandemic because they're too, anybody who voted for Trump was too stupid to wash their hands. Well, look at a map. Is that what you're seeing? No. Oh, but I forgot to tell you the good news. Okay, so somebody who has outstanding credentials but isn't involved in the medical authorities, but certainly with their knowledge is watching, said to me yesterday, the data simply changed. The data changed. There's no explanation for this. It was saying that this thing was going to peak in mid-June, but now it looks like it's going to peak about Easter. Well, that's really great news, because the leaders are having to decide how to keep, you know, are we going to weigh keeping the shutdown going so that we can flatten the curve? Understand, we're not trying to stamp it out. We're just flattening the curve, that's all. Because we don't expect people dropping like flies. We just didn't want to overwhelm the hospital system. So we just wanted the spread of the virus, which we expect, which won't be apocalyptic. It won't be horrific. It's going to spread based on, you know, human projection, what knowledge tells us. We're not stamping it out. We're just flattening the curve and staying in. But to weigh that, and because if the hospitals were overwhelmed, there would be people who would die because they didn't get care. All right, so weigh that versus the economy. And so already, we thank God we had a good economy, but most of those gains have been wiped out, and we don't want to crash the economy because it is precarious, because we have been doing quantitative easing. And while the United States, and particularly here in Texas, we're just doing fine, or we were before all of this happened, a place like Europe, they would say, oh, we're just getting out of the crisis now. Right, so what we call the recession, they call the crisis, and they're just getting out of it now. And many, many people lost their job, and they don't want a crashed economy because, again, many people will lose their job, and their government simply does not have the money to sustain all of that. So it takes the wisdom of Solomon to know how to weigh those priorities. Of course, the media over there is not helping at all. They're whipping up a really uninformed, oh, we have to prioritize lives, like, what? What are you even talking about? Because in a crashed economy, people die too. So, but that's the mantra of people who are led around by the nose. But great news, we don't have to worry about that if this peaks at Easter. And so I tell another neighbor, and he said, yeah, he works for a large hospital conglomerate. And he said, oh yeah, where I work, people are gearing up, they're preparing. And then he looked up from his beer and he said, yeah, they're still preparing. With a puzzled look. And that's great. That means that hospital is not overwhelmed there because they're still gearing up. And this, I'm recording this April the 1st. And that's not an April 1st joke. Okay. So it will be aired, of course, in a week. And then I went, walked some more, and I found another neighbor who is involved in self-employed, we'll say internet hardware. And he said, yeah, I have a client that has data that's 5 days ahead of the CDC. And they said, oh, this shutdown really had an impact. But when we shut down bars and restaurants, that did it. So that's great news. You understand what he just said. Now, that was his analysis. But that's great news. It's the same news, really, as the first person said. But my analysis might be just slightly different. Let's see, the weekend that we shut down the bars and restaurants, as good as that was, wasn't that the same weekend that we had a National Day of Prayer? And our president just days ago said, wouldn't it be great if we could all worship together Passover, Easter? And because we can't now, churches are not meeting en masse. And so I think the Lord has honored those words. All right, so we'll continue to be alone together. All right, so following that up, I would say a tip would be to be very critical about, you know, wise about what kind of media you let in. If you're letting in media that's whipping up fear, that's not helpful to your own health, mental health, or physical health. And certainly not to your children, because children have even a harder time having proportionality. So the death toll, you know, people die every day. The death numbers would be about the same if the pandemic weren't going on. How many recovery toll have you seen? Okay, so, So the news media, once again, is often not being helpful, and they're acting so bizarrely. I mean, not just impolitely, but bizarrely with the president. Think back in Reagan's time, we invaded Grenada and the press was not invited. The press was sycophantic with the previous administration and gave him passes on 13 times the Supreme Court ruled him unconstitutional. But did we even hear that? No, because we couldn't possibly be racist. Okay, so a window into family life. With younger children, I'm finding, just as I suspected, they're not going to be able to be doing online classes all day long. And just as I suspected, we've had internet problems. So plan to do some useful things. Do you know other cultures typically, always, through the history of the planet, children just did what the parents were doing? So if you need to scrub the floor, teach your daughter how to mop the floor. If you're going to wipe the table, teach your daughter how to wipe the table. If you're going to mow the lawn and your son is old enough, teach him how to mow the lawn and edge the lawn. Yes, let your children do things with you. Make it an educational effort. Yes, it will take more time, but it doesn't take a whole lot more time to let Junior help you this time. But after a few times, it's going to help your family a lot. So one family I know who has a kindergarten, first grade, or something like that, they've always been very educationally oriented. And their child, unlike some of her peers, are not traumatized. She did FaceTime with her teacher because she's used to FaceTiming with her grandparents or Skyping or whatever. So there really is no trauma there. She's having a great time. Dad is able to be home and so is taking some breaks and to go throw the ball around with his daughter. And remember, this is not a scary time. This is a time where we're all pulling together and we're making precious memories. This is not a frustrating time. It's precious memories. It's not a scary time. It's a time where we're all pulling together. So another view into family life, family that has a couple of older children, and so they're all doing exercises together with the television. They're all meditating together. Okay. Then y'all pray together. And they then all have to find their own room to do their online courses and work. So everybody changes a particular room into an office, and there we have it. And so they're eating together and carrying on. And while it's not a vacation, really precious memories. Okay, let's see. You can directly talk about how we deal with stress. And we had a lot of teachers are undergoing stress right now. A lot of teachers. We had an article sent around trauma-informed teaching. And I was talking with somebody who, and some other teachers in different schools, and we kind of laughed and said, yeah, we need trauma-enforced administration of teachers, whereas we're all dealing with flip-flop. The administration says one thing one day and another thing another day, but if you've already transmitted that to your students, you know. And so faculties, where they know each other, they can have a virtual beer and rag on the administration, but in so many of our places, we have adjuncts and we don't know one another well enough to have traded phone numbers. So I'm not suggesting that you drink beer or use the word rag. Okay, so, but that's what was said. So what I will say is, reach out to your friends, to your relatives. Be sure they're okay. Reach out to your colleagues. Do some stress relief. And hey, if your child is at home, help them with their homework, yes. But say something nice to the teacher. Somebody said, you're going to find out that it's not all the teacher's fault, that some of it's junior's fault. Well, you might also discover a little bit more about what the curriculum is. And, you know, homeschool parents, they're not having any changes at all. But those of you who really depend on the public school, this is a good time to check in and find out what's going on. But this is not a good time to confront the teacher or the administration, because they're having real challenges. So it's a good time to be supportive. Also, great time to just stack up good things to do. Think of all the chemistry experiments you can do in the kitchen. There is a wonderful book about that, but you could talk about how ice changes to water to steam. And if you have that book, you can use red cabbage for pH indicator. Go and be observant about what's in the yard. Have a botany lesson or a zoology lesson in the yard. Just start, sit down now and brainstorm 20 things that are age appropriate for you and your children to do, and then go do them, and you'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot about your children, and you'll learn together, and that's the most important thing. And of course, do read the Bible and pray together. And so important, spend some time really listening to your children. I've discovered that it's just so important. You don't really have much clue how well your lessons are sitting until you do some extended listening. Conversations are great, but extended conversations reveal a lot more. And particularly for those of you who have children who are differently abled, this is a wonderful time, because now the education is one-on-one, and you will discover so much about what works and that you'll be able to implement. You might find out some things that aren't working, but always leave some leeway for stress, and remember, you're making precious memories. Okay, so this is Sharon Sorrows proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all people, and is a mighty hand and an outstretched arm in today's world. Amen. Hallelujah.
Celebrate the victory. Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sorrells. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom Broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to greatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org.